As most people seem to do, when I moved to LA, I changed my look slightly. I eventually ended up growing the requisite mustache and goatee, but initially I tried experimenting with hair gel. Not particularly radical, I confess, but the longest journey begins with a single step. Standing in the local Vons, I was faced with a dilemma. I decided to go with LA style gel. But I couldn't decide which of their formulas was right for me. Specifically, I couldn't figure out which version had the strongest holding power, extra super hold or mega hold. In a similar vein, who has the better voice, Bonovox or Ultravox? Linguistically, I'd have to go with Ultravox, but I think Bono wins for actual ability. When I was in my early fevered days of record buying, I would grab onto anything that seemed promising, even if it was the record sleeve, or in one case, a single chord. One day, I walked into one of the two worthwhile record stores in Traverse City and heard a record playing while I shuffled through the racks. The music was fine, nothing outstanding, but nothing horrible either. And then there was one piano chord in the middle of a song that was so delicious that I bought the album, the Australian band Split End's True Colors, because of it. Turned out to be a good gamble. True Colors is a solid album and my favorite from Down Under. You can keep your men at work or in excess. In another illustration of the random nature of my early record collecting, I walked into Full Moon Records one day with my month's allowance burning a hole in my hand, and they were playing side two of an album called 3 into 1, which was a condensation of the first three Ultravox albums into one greatest hits package. In retrospect, it's a good thing I hadn't walked in during side one, or I wouldn't have paid it any attention. I ran to the appropriate rack, but I couldn't find it. Following a hunch that I had learned to hone during my early shopping days, I went to look for it in the import section. Sure enough, there it was. I sighed. It was just too expensive to take a chance on, so I reluctantly put it back in the rack, but I filed the name away for later. couple of months later, I was back scouring the racks when I ran across a brand new and, more importantly, domestically released Ultravox album, Vienna. The cover was suitably new wave, a tasteful black and white photo of the band looking dapper in suits and standing in odd poses facing oblique angles. And after debating the merits for a few minutes, I decided to take a chance and bought it. Another lucky break. Up until that point, there were two types of music that interested me. My first love and greatest passion was synthesizer music, especially the lush orchestral music of Synergy. My favorites of the genre, Synergy, Jean-Michel Jarre, Tangerine Dream, Vangelis, tended toward long pieces with flowing textures. Sequences abounded, but the rhythm of the music was pretty subdued. Although the tonalities were all excitingly different, the structures were based largely on classical models, in which melody and harmony prevail over rhythm. Although the reasons for this had largely to do with keeping a large orchestra together and capable of articulating complex vertical chords, the result was that this became a sort of highbrow way of approaching and listening to music. Consequently, I know I'm going to get heat for this, classical music is largely an intellectual exercise. Certainly, there is a strong emotional element to some of it, but the emotions are usually contemplative, reflective ones. I know there's lots of exciting classical music, but it seems to have its most profound effects when exploring sorrow and wanting and loss. Sure, there are your Rites of Springs that, inconceivably today, caused riots during performances, but it seems that, for the most part, classical music invokes tears and joy more than rage. It is emotional, but refined emotions, appropriate for ladies and gentlemen of good breeding. The other music that I was starting to get interested in was rock. By the way, whatever happened to the roll? And here the opposite was true. While there are some great heartbreaking ballads in popular music, most rock goes for the visceral excitement created by the glorious cacophony of clashing guitars and crashing drums. Taking a page from its uncle, jazz, rock is all about the beat. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Except by the time it came to rock, the beat didn't swing so much as pound, and it's that pounding beat, mimicking the heart in extreme emotions, that fires the fuel that feed the feet, that causes teenagers the world over to burst out of their civilized shells and let the monster within loose. A good rock beat makes the blood boil and the libido swell. It's id juice, and that's why so many parents are afraid of it. Anyway, these two camps were distinctly different. Sure, rock used synthesizers, but only to ornament or augment, never as the main course. And there was certainly rhythm in synthesizer music, but it was subdued and refined, and subservient to melody and harmony, and especially texture. I wasn't a big rock fan, but I was learning to appreciate the beat and its power to blow the funk out of my brain and twist my body into spastic convolutions. Synthesizer music was music for my head, and rock was music for my body, and never the twain did meet. From the very first beat of the first track of Vienna, I knew everything had changed. The drums 1-2 punch the air out of you, a filter sweep rushes up breathlessly, and the synthesizers kick in. But instead of refined, subtle, intricately woven sounds, the synthesizer is pushy and insistent, almost rude. The entire musical track is made up of synthesizers, although electric guitars show up later on the album, and it is all pinned down by a killer backbeat, as exciting as any rock song I had heard. It was a revelation. In one crystalline moment, my two musical loves came together. I was transfixed. Although it happens to me less and less now, there were certain songs that I ran across that were instantly addictive. I just could not get enough of them, and the second the track ended, sometimes even before, I was ripping the needle back to the top to shoot myself up with this infectious sound again. This song, the opener of Vienna, was such a song. I knew that with a promise this great, the rest of the album had to have merit, but I just couldn't get past the rush of Sleepwalk. Over and over I played it, compulsively, my heart leaping out of my chest with excitement every time, until my mom came in and begged me to play something else, so I let the needle go through the rest of the record and fell back onto my bed, spent and exhausted, ready for a cigarette and a little post-coital cuddling. Ultravox was not fashionable, but most groundbreakers aren't. At the time they started in the late 1970s, punk was the name of the game in England, and these guys, with their suits, synthesizers, and lush sonorities, were regarded with skepticism, if not downright hostility. Punk was all about ugly, and anything that hinted at culture or refinement was openly scorned. I didn't know it at the time, but Vienna marked a significant change in Ultravox, and led to the brief New Romantic genre, which got folded into New Wave. I'm sure other people would point to other influences as being more important, but for me, Vienna was the beginning of synthpop, and it was a harbinger of the only time in my life in which my taste and popular tastes coincided. Sort of. The rest of the album was spectacular, although there was nothing on it like the blistering Sleepwalk. There's a peculiar tension on the album, created by the close proximity of wildly different elements. It's wholly synthetic and artificial, except for the drums, which push the songs out of the brain and into the feet. The synthesizers and occasional electric guitars are both edgy and lush at the same time, with insistent, pushy leads on top of gorgeous beds of swirling sonorities. The singing alternates between impassioned and coolly detached. The look is refined cafe society, and the sound is sweaty dance club. All these elements gelled on this one album, and a whole new style was off and running. Every song on the album is worthwhile, from the icily angular and mysterious Mr. X, to the gorgeous torch song Vienna, to the robotic frenzy of All Stood Still.
Walked in the cold air. Freezing breath on a window pane.
Throughout the whole album is a thread of decadence and melancholy, which is distinctly European in feel. And not only were their synthesizers standing on equal footing as the drums and electric guitars, but one of the members actually played violin and viola. Viola, the red-headed stepchild of the orchestra, my own personal musical albatross, was featured on the most excitingly modern album I had yet run across. Emboldened by my love of this phenomenal album, I bit the bullet and plunked my entire monthly allowance on the import 3-in-1 the next time I made it into town. Three into One, as it turned out, chronicled the early years of Ultravox, before half the members, including founding songwriter and vocalist John Fox, left the band. This would have left most bands in shambles, as John Fox largely was the sound of Ultravox. Interested in electronics from an early age, he rejected the passionate sloppiness of punk for a cooler, more detached keyboard-based sound. Eventually. One of the revelations of 3-in-1 is the first and earliest track on the record, a single that never made it on an album. Young Savage is all brutal beats and crunchy guitars with nary a synthesizer in sight, sound. Not quite as minimalist as the punkiest punk, the guitars arpeggiate the chords in different ways for each verse, it still has the vicious, violent thrill of punk running through its veins. But even though it's called Young Savage, an appropriate image for punk, the lyrics are far too abstract and poetic for the genre. Fox relishes disconnected imagery and fragmented narratives in his songs, and many of them are built up of tiny details that add up to an impressionistic whole. Young Savage had the same effect on me that Sleepwalk did. I just couldn't get enough of it when I first heard it. Nowhere else in the Ultravox canon, nor in any of Fox's solo releases, is there anything nearly so beautifully brutal.
Condemned to be a stranger, subway dweller, dead end danger, kicking through the dust of friends who never gave, they'd only lend. Every sneer is thrown away with practiced gestures of disdain. The outlaw stands is so pedantic, hate the world, it's so romantic.
The second track on 3-in-1 is the scorching Rock Rock, which also rock rocks, but they've started broadening their palette with keyboard.
Rock, 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 rock.
little buzz they had created was enough to get them signed to Island Records, and they went into the studio to record their first eponymous album under the direction of none other than Brian Eno. By this time, John Fox had fully developed his icy alienation style of songwriting and singing, and even managed to break into the British charts with an odd and arty mood piece called My Sex.
My sex waits for me like a mongrel waits downwind on a tightrope leash. My sex is a fragile acrobat. Sometimes I'm an overcane shot, sometimes I'm an automat. My sex.
The music for My Sex is as fragmented as the lyrics, and the whole song works as a wonderfully disjointed tone poem of modern alienation and urban despair.
My sex is invested in suburban photographs, skyscraper shadows on a car crash overpass.
However, Fox can go overboard with the dramatics, and most of the first side of 3 Into 1 does just that on such pretentious snorers as The Man Who Dies Every Day and The Wild, The Beautiful, and The Damned. Ah, but side 2, the side I heard a bit of in the record store, is a thing of beauty. With songs mostly culled from their second, Ha Ha Ha, and third, Systems of Romance, albums, Ultravox has settled into a beautiful, refined, synthetic sound to go with their evocative portraits of decay and decadence. Slow Motion, Quiet Men, and the classic Hiroshima Mon Amour are beautiful songs gorgeously produced, with a haunting mixture of icy metal enveloped in comforting velvet, or, to use Thomas Dolby's phrase from his wonderful Dissidents, like an iron fist in a glove full of Vaseline. High point for haunting moodiness and sparse alienation is the track Just for a Moment.
Talking in the window as the light fades, I heard my voice break just for a moment. Talking by the window,
which is little more than a heartbeat, faint humming electronics, a couple of unsettling piano chords played underwater in the dark, and Fox's oddly mechanical voice. When I was at the University of Chicago, I finally crashed and burned. Being thrown into a foreign environment with a roommate I abhorred, in a place that cheapened what I most deeply believed in, lost in a dead gray windy city, studying the musty words of dead gray windy white guys, finally got to be too much, and I committed academic suicide.
We'll
This was not easy for me, as my drive to succeed and please is so fundamental, but finally the circuits overloaded, and I just walked out of my classes. I asked why I had to study what I was being made to study, and nobody could give me an answer that I believed in, and my brittle, beaten ego finally could hold nobody else's hopes and dreams, and I let go of everything that was poisoning me and embraced that which made me flourish.
Listening to the music the machines make, I let my heart break just for a moment.
I got a room to myself, and I dropped all my academics. I picked up an introductory art class, an electronic music workshop, and I tried to get into a photography class, but I couldn't. So I had to settle for the next best thing, filmmaking. It was a good class, with time split between watching and discussing films and trying our hand at rudimentary film projects. It was where I really discovered the power and potential of film in a way I had never suspected. For my final project, I made a short black-and-white silent film called Solitaire, which was meant to be a portrait of Chicago as it appeared to me. It was greatly therapeutic. I took the relentless, soul-crushing grayness that threatened to drown me and turned it into art. Wandering around the bleak landscape with a camera made everything more abstract and less potent. I could search for imagery that resonated with my lonely soul and capture it on film, turning it into a positive exploration of my emotional state instead of just being a relentless drain on my energy and psyche. As I wandered the streets, I kept Ultravox's Just for a Moment firmly in mind, trying to capture with abstract imagery that beautifully broken song.
Listening to the music the machines make, I let my heart break.
Screening the film at the end of the year to the appreciative applause of my classmates and professor, I was flooded with emotion, speechless and swollen with tears. It was the only A that I earned during my year at the University of Chicago, and it gave me a thread to follow out of the labyrinth into my life beyond.
We'll never leave here, never. Let's stay in here forever. And when the streets are quiet, we'll walk out in the silence.
Although those songs on 3-into-1 meant so much to me, nobody else cared. Nobody bought the albums, Island dumped them, and John Fox left for a solo career, effectively eviscerating the band. The remaining members bravely decided to continue and tapped Midge Ure to be the new vocalist. They approached Chrysalis Records, who were understandably wary of them, as they hardly sold any records when their most defining member was still with them, but they gave them a little money to go into the studio and record some demos. If they liked the demos enough, they'd foot the bill for the album. Ultravox went into the studio and, instead of recording rough demos for a few songs, they put all their eggs in one basket and produced a finished version of just one song, Sleepwalk. Chrysalis was suitably impressed and signed them, and they recorded their masterpiece, Vienna. It's difficult to overstate the influence Ultravox has had on popular musical development, despite the fact that nobody seems willing to give them their props. I believe synth pop and new wave can be traced back directly to them, and especially to Vienna. A stark contrast to punk, Ultravox gave people who couldn't or wouldn't pierce their cheeks with safety pins something else to hear, and something else to wear besides combat boots, ripped t-shirts, and red mohawks. They recontextualized the synthesizer and proved that it could be used to create the entire sonic palette for a band, which was a revolutionary concept that would drastically change the sound of popular music during the 1980s. Ah, those were the days.
I found a perfect picture of a perfect stranger. It looked as if
After the success of Vienna, Ultravox recorded Rage in Eden, which most critics applauded as being the pinnacle of their career, but which I think loses something by their delving fully into the lush synthesizer sound and keeping the cold, alienating ones largely out of the mix. It is that glorious tension between the two that makes Vienna such a compelling listen. After that, they hit their stateside popularity peak with Quartet, an album produced by the legendary George Martin, but I had largely lost interest in them by this point and had moved on to greener pastures, but pastures that had been fertilized by Ultravox. The death knell for me happened in 1983, when I had the opportunity to see them playing live in Chicago during my year of penance at the U of C. It was one of the worst concerts I had ever seen, and I largely gave up on them after that. They were so loud that their songs were indistinguishable. They were halfway through Sleepwalk before I even recognized it. Despite their attempts to enliven the show with a tribal drumming section, in which they stood side by side near the front of the stage and played synth drums to a backing track, the show was disappointingly boring. Some of that was situational. I was very tired because I had been out all night the night before, and then went to classes and then went to work before meeting up with my friend Dave, who had traveled from Grand Rapids to visit me. And the reason I'd stayed out all night the night before was that I had gone with my friend Christian to see Lena Lovitch, and that was the best concert I've ever seen. So really, Ultravox didn't have a chance. Still, they kicked off the small New Romantic movement, which was the first movement I really felt a part of, and their influence stretched well into the 1980s. They revolutionized the use of synthesizers and created some absolutely stunning music in the process, and for that, I shall always be grateful. Fuck Bono. Ultra rules.
We stood still. We all stood still.